getting good at improv is reps. And I know we always hear that, doing reps. And I think it just doing it for a long time and being open to having epiphanies.
Gareth is an improviser from Dublin, Ireland, and he is a performer and teacher at the Free Association in London. He can be seen playing on the headline show Jacuzzi and the House Herald team Nana. Gareth is also the creator of Fabled, the improvised fantasy adventure. Gareth and I talk about what to do when the scene runs out, to be open for epiphanies and the importance of keeping practicing. We talk about being the best voice of reason that you possibly can, innovate, don't create, and the reason why we have formats. We also talk about shooting sideways, lily pads, and the reincorporation island. This is episode 73 with Gareth O'Connor on Navigate in the Scenes.
Navigating scenes, like people feeling lost in scenes. I've heard that from a lot of my people who I coach and some students, you know. What do I do next? What's the next thing to do? I think it's a question that comes up a lot.
Let's just jump off from that. Like, what are your thoughts on it?
I've heard the question come up a lot in my coaching and teaching. And I remember thinking when I was taking classes and doing shows at first, that question kept coming to my mind of what do I do next? What's, you know, the scene's going well and we're getting some laughs. Now what do I do? I've run out of road in a way. And I think because the way that this style of improv is taught, which I really like, and I think it was the only way that I could have learned how to do improv in this way. I think a lot of the time I found myself thinking, okay, well, I need to, there's a map in my head that I need to find the right direction. And there's a game move that needs to be made. By doing that, not listening and getting into my head and thinking there's a plan that I'm not following correctly, or I'm doing, you know, strong choices, weak choices, all that sort of stuff that definitely tripped me up. And I think a lot of it, the more that I've done improv, the more that I realize that it really feels like when you're doing your best stuff, it's like a state of mind more than anything that you can really do with your sort of conscious mind, any planning or outthinking the scene. A lot of what I feel works is really genuinely turning off that side of your mind and really trying to react in the moment and make choices based on your instincts and trusting that all of that stuff that you've been doing over the years and all of those classes on, don't do transactional scenes, don't say no, don't fight, all these things, they'll come in and they'll help guide you without you consciously thinking of it. You know, like, it's like riding a bike. You've got all of that stuff in the background, and hopefully if you can trust that now you've got all of that experience and you can trust your instincts, I think the scenes almost make themselves. And I'm sure you found this from time to time, and I'm sure anybody who's done improv for a long time has found that those moments or those scenes where you're on autopilot and it's just working. You don't know exactly why. You're just jumping in and the right thing is just coming up each time. And I think that's the state that we could all benefit from being in at all times. But obviously it's not always possible.
And why is that? Like, why? How can we increase? Because I totally agree with you. And Gareth, when I saw you play, I saw you 2-3 times, I think, when I was at the FA.
Oh, wow, cool.
I really did, like, before I even knew it was you, Gareth, mm-hmm. because we talked on email. I thought that that guy with the little beard and the dark hair guy, he was, yeah, who was you then? I figured out later, but so I was glad to find out that because you were very staged. You had a great stage presence, I'd say.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and you treated it for real. So afterwards, I'm always taking notes after I'm seeing a show. Like,
cool.
What did I enjoy? What didn't I enjoy, and so on, and everything from like emceeing to whatever the venue as well, like FA venue and so. So I think you were in that state of mind when you play. I'm not sure if you were. It was the Fable in Bro.
In
3 weeks ago or so.
Oh, yeah. Great. That was a really fun show. Yeah, really, really enjoyed that show.
Yeah. And so like, how can we practice to be in that state as often as we can? Because we also need, I think, in a way, to know the tools. Okay, this is a transactional scene or whatever. Mm-hmm. And unconsciously, I'm knowing that. And unconsciously, I'm doing choices that the scenes needs. And it might be the correct way to say no right now. So I'm doing that. Just being. I don't know if you understand what I'm saying, but like...
Yeah, totally.
How can we... Like, what do you say then if you're coaching and someone wants to navigate in the scene? Or like, yeah.
I think the boring answer is that it's from every person that I've been taught by, the people who I've played with, every person that I know who's like, who can put themselves into that place, it's because they've just done it for a long time, you know? I think getting good at improv is reps. And I know we always hear that, doing reps. And I think it just doing it for a long time and being open to having epiphanies. And it's a Will Hines's book, How to Be the Greatest Improviser on Earth. At the start, that's his, like, you know, if I can give anybody any, just a small piece of advice, if this is the only bit that you read, that's what he says. And I think I read that when I was taking my level three, like five years ago. And at the time thinking, oh, I know what that means. Yeah, for sure. But the longer I've been doing this, the more that I really realize, like, that is really all it is. If you do it for a long time and you're not open to epiphanies, and you'll get better at what you do. You'll have better shows with your style or whatever you sort of enjoy. But if you do it for a long time and you're open to constantly being like, oh, that's the thing, I think that's the way to get better and to be able to get to that place where you're genuinely listening, you're genuinely not planning, you're really trying to connect with that person on stage. So that's the boring answer. To do it in... like in the here and now, I think it is by doing those exercises and those things that we learn in class, and just practicing this is another boring answer. The boring parts of the scene, you know, quote unquote boring, the bits that aren't funny, basically. And I've found so much, I've taken so much from my recent sessions with coaches, especially on my Harold team. Our coach, Alex Holland, he's been so great at just taking us and saying, right, you're all on this team for a reason. You're all good at improv. You can do the Harold. Let's slow down, take our time at the top of scenes, practice boring dramatic scenes, not necessarily like big, you know, bullshy dramatic scenes, but scenes that have stakes, but that aren't funny. And it can be really hard because you're so used to getting up there and thinking about whether this is funny. Like, I'm being boring on stage. I'm not entertaining anybody. But I think being in that space and not panicking and being patient and just playing scenes truthfully. And even if it is a genre scene or a, like a fantasy world or a sci-fi world, like really acting and committing to that reality quite hard, I think it really turns off that funny creator brain. And often you'll stumble upon something just by being there, just by somebody saying the wrong thing by accident. But I think it's just scary to do that. But I think practicing that and being in scenes that you feel uncomfortable about because it's not laugh after laugh, or you think you're being boring, but actually whenever I see a show that's like that, I'm not laughing, but I'm like leaning in and I'm so interested in what they're doing. But yeah, I think like practicing that sort of stuff, practicing being like a really good voice of reason, like not a boring one, somebody who, like, you know, if you're in a scene with somebody who's just being completely crazy and just spending the whole scene being the best actor you can be and reacting genuinely and being optimistic in the scene, even if this person is like just wants to, you know, tear down the walls and really trying to dig into the specifics of the world and what may be true about the reality that you've set up. You know, I've got to go get the kids at 2 p.m. You can't keep doing this, you know. And it feels kind of weird it's more vulnerable almost to do those moves in a scene. I think it's easier to like go for like a funny line or an interesting character, but to spend a whole scene like thinking of like mundane things to put into the scene, like it can feel really vulnerable for some reason, at least for me. But I think practicing that stuff definitely helps put you in that space.
Yeah, and I think that it's like very general that it is actually vulnerable to be that grounded in a scene and trying to be as good voice of reason as you can and really treat whatever happens on the stage as if it's real.
Mm.
And as you said, like stumble upon the things that probably a mistake then in a scene, wrong name or whatever, space being wrong, or like forgetting to take its seatbelts off in a car, like whatever you want to frame in the scene.
Yeah.
So really being open for epiphanies and practicing and drilling, of course. So, but still then, if you're a voice of reason, it's a lot of things that you can practice on. For me, anyway, I had to like choose one thing and then I was practicing on that until I mastered that, and hopefully it's second nature. Is that something? Because if you said that you did level 3 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
So how much, do you come from an acting background or?
Yeah, I'm from Ireland originally, but I came to London. I signed with an agent over here, and yeah, I had some success in my acting career, but was always into comedy in a way that I love stand up, but I never thought like that's what I want to do. And I loved Jake and Amir. I don't know if you've ever heard of Jake and Amir. They're like they're on College Humor, did a lot of sketch comedy stuff. But they had a podcast and they always had like really great guests on there, like Ben Schwartz and Josh Rubin and all these people who talked about being on Harold Teams or the Harold and learn the UCB and all these things that I didn't really understand. And I literally Googled Harold Teams London and found the Free Association and just was like completely blown away by what I saw there. And I just was like, I just want to do this forever. This is what I want to spend my time doing. But yeah, like I've been taking classes there. Like as soon as I started, I just kept taking, and I've still like, I've never stopped. Like I just redid my level 5 recently. I'm going back to do there's a bunch of workshops coming up and stuff. So, I'm sure I'm not answering your question now. I can't remember what it was.
I don't know if it was like an explicit question, but what I think is that I want to grasp and I want to know how to, and it's of course also like individual, but I think it's hard for us to practice a lot of things at the same time, in a sense.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah.
Like, we are in the sense of playing grounded because, and the voice of reason treating it as real. I'm hearing that I'm repeating these things. But I think that FA is actually like, stands out in that sense and also in the acting part. That's why I'm also asked about the acting. And speaking of epiphanies, that was one of, when I did your level 2 to 4 this month, I could really like, or I got a picture in my head of how improv and improv comedy is like based on the foundation of feeling safe. First of all, like, feeling safe. So building that safeness. And then we have like the improv branch with flexibility, saying yes, creating stuff together, taking risk or whatsoever, make up things on the spot together. And then we have the acting thing, really like speaking out loud and speaking with direction or whatsoever.
Yeah, like the scene work.
The scene work, yeah. And then we have some kind of like theory as well, like a third branch, which is like, of course, game of the scene then, or if you want to do narrative, whatever you want to like. Yeah. So like, what does the scene need in a sense? Speaking of game of the scene, and I'm used to play premises, I think that there is, when I play it here, there is a lot of things that actually is the first unusual thing or the shiny thing, as you say, before the verbal premise or shiny thing comes, for instance, because of, or it might be because of the lack of acting. So if someone speaks quiet by themselves, like, I want to, like, why are you speaking so quiet?
Yeah, yeah.
Or if they speak very loud or whatever, like if or if they miss something in the space work, like the scene work is
yeah.
So I think that I could actually like really enjoy game when I watch you because the acting were there and the improv were there, so I can enjoy the game of the scene for real, and it was very nice.
Oh, that's very kind of you to say. I think the FA really does focus on like grounding right up top. Like when in the courses, the grounding's very early on, and it's like so important to the style of improv that the FA teaches. And it's like, it's similar to the UCB style for sure. Like, you know, whenever I've read about the first days of UCB, people were just like so blown away by they used the real names and they were all playing normal people. Like, people's idea of improv before that was like, oh, we're all wacky, crazy characters, you know, and there is room for that too. Like, but I think that it's nice for an audience to see people looking relaxed. Like, that's a big part of what I think puts audiences in a good space, because improv is kind of scary for an audience to come and see. The expectation of it, like in the UK, improv is it has different roots. It's the Keith Johnstone side of improv is the kind of what it's mainly known for, and I think people are surprised when they come to the FA or come to shows where you see people from the FA playing, and these people that are like, yeah, playing like playing very grounded, and yeah, these sort of, it's this style of improv at the FA is very much more structured, I think, than the roots of improv in the UK. So I think people come and it's not what they expect. But I think it really behooves the improviser to focus on those things and, like letting your audience not be embarrassed for you. You know, if you seem awkward and worried and stressed, which like 90% of the time when you're doing improv, you probably will, especially at the start. And again, that's another reps thing. It's like the more reps you do, the less each show, the less each show matters, but that's not what I mean. I think the less each show, the less pressure that's on each show, you know, because there's also the internal side of improv and the community of like, oh, this teacher's in that I want to really, you know, that I really like, and I want to do a good show in front of them. Or Harold auditions are coming up. I need to make a good impression, and that is definitely a part of a lot of this stuff. But I guess, you hope that the more that people do it, the more that they can let that stuff sort of fall away for the most part and be on stage and just be like, you know, in the zone and feeling confident and relaxed. And I think it is, yeah, really important to just like to be able to commit hard even when it's not funny. And I think it's really hard to do that. And it can be really, I think vulnerable. I think it feels more scary than, at least it did for me for a long time. It feels more scary than, having the armor of a character or of a fun game that you're playing. Like, but I just think all the best improv that I see now is that plus these people who are just like, look like pros. They look like they've come to this like tiny theater above a pub for sometimes like 15 people. For the most part, the FA shows sell pretty good, which is, we're very fortunate to have that. But like, yeah, you know, I'm sure you've done them as well. A few people show up, but I think even in that, if you have the right attitude, you can come at it with a kind of professionalism and a commitment that feels almost like a play, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And when you're speaking, I'm thinking of the quote, going for cheers instead of laughs. Which you like, it's a mental attitude that can help you, I guess. And Gareth, when you say that, yes, keeping getting these reps in, because that's a thing that we say, and I totally agree with it, but it's something in it back to like, isolate, or like if I want to, with an analogist about playing basketball and you drill the shots, you do 10,000 hours of this and you're shooting it like in a special technique, I don't know, like throwing it just from the side maybe, the basketball. So then you become pretty good at like throwing it from the side.
Yeah.
So I want to like, how do you practice them being a good voice of reason? What do you do like if you do a coaching session or whatever?
Yeah, I really just tell people to like, innovate, don't create is something that I've thought about a lot, which is like, because, and again, these are all things that I just did. I did the opposite for a long time and have been coached out of it. And it's stuck with me that like, even every year I feel like I'm way better at listening now. I don't think I could get any better. I'm really listening and I'm really being truthful. And then another year goes by and I'm like, oh, now I'm actually really listening and being really truthful. And another year goes by. And it's like every year I feel like, you know, again, I get to a point where I'm like, oh, when I thought that I was like, I was not even close. And I just think like every reps and time and being open to epiphany. Like, I think like what you're saying is like, how do you practice it all? How do you not get stuck in one lane doing the sort of sideways shots and not being able to be adaptable? And I think having good coaches and having good teachers and playing with good people and playing with like people who you don't think are so good, like or people that you don't know at all, and you know, you just have to deal with whatever's going on in the scene. I think playing a lot and having coaches watch your show, I think, is really crucial. It's something that people don't really do a lot, at least in my experience in the UK. If you're on a Harold team or if you're on like a House team, that's just sort of something that's like built in, at least at the FA. You'll often have your coach at your show. But I think for indie teams, they don't often, and I guess it's a financial thing, I totally understand. You obviously feel like in the room there's so much, but I think like there's so much to be gained from getting notes after a show from a coach. Because you're being your real improviser on stage, or at least you're dealing with all of the other elements of improv, which includes the audience, which includes being tired, which includes what you ate before the show, like all of these things that actually we don't really think about, but they do affect us. Not that I don't think your coach is going to give you notes on what you ate before the show, but that's where I've had so many moments of just like being hit with a note during a show and me being like, yeah, I don't know why I did that. Like, I wouldn't do that in a practice. I wouldn't do that, you know, consciously, but it's something that I'm doing. And I'm glad that under the pressure of a show, somebody was there to sort of see that. But yeah, I think being open to epiphanies is the thing that if you're shooting sideways all the time, having somebody to give you that pointer and for you to genuinely take that on instead of having a coach telling you, like, you're shooting sideways all the time. You could maybe try and, like, you know, go for a jump shot. I don't know basketball. This analogy is leaving me. If they give you that advice and you're like, yeah, cool, whatever, man, and then you keep throwing sideways shots, like, those are the people who are in the community or have been doing improv for a long time that you sort of see doing the same stuff, and you can just see that, oh, like, yeah. I just think that the people I see that grow and get really good are the people that seem open to those epiphanies and are still going to class, are taking workshops whenever especially when the people from the US come over. We have a bunch of people coming over soon to do workshops, and they all sell out really quick. And I think that's exciting to me, to see, like, the more senior players at the theater taking classes and being open for those epiphanies, you know, after 10, 15 years, if they did improv in uni. But yeah, like, I really think that's just having good coaches and being open to when you get those notes to really consider, like, yeah, maybe this is the thing, you know, maybe this is the thing that's going to make me go, oh shit.
So, like, do you notice, because it seems like we are also talking a lot about playing grounded as well. Mm-hmm. Is there a difference of the people coming to the FA? Like, if you have done Johnstone improv, do you still benefit from that? Like, does that make you a better FA improviser, if you know what I'm saying? Like,
so if you've come from a background of, like, if you've taken classes at a more improv-based theater,
improv.
Yeah, I think it's like, I think we at the FA we let students start at level 2 if they've taken a course at another theater. Because I think the tenet, like, what we teach, we do have in level 1, there are definitely a lot of very sort of long form UCB type stuff, especially at the end, just like scenic stuff, trying to do sort of scenes, but we don't really focus so much on the things that maybe differentiate us from that style of improv. But so when people come from level 2, if they've taken a level 1 elsewhere, it's kind of in the same ballpark, at least, for sure. So I think it's also the styles of both sides of it. And also I'm talking from a position of, like, I came to the FA, I got obsessed with doing improv there and the style of improv, and then retroactively going back and getting really into UCB, the history of UCB, and watching, like there's a team from, can we swear on this podcast? Is that?
Yeah, that's okay. Go ahead. Yeah.
Sweet. There's a team from UCB called Fuck That Shit that I talk about a lot. And they were just, like, a huge inspiration to me. So, like, I very much just got drilled into this style of improv, and I have really not a lot of experience in the other style. And I really, from all I've learned from the people who do both, from the people who do one or the other, is that it's just whatever way your brain works. Like, whatever you like, if you need, I needed the structure that the Free Association provided in its classes. Whether or not the other style of improv has that sort of structure, I don't know. But from my understanding is that it's a little more free form, and you've got, like, less of that sort of structured, you know, like, I'm sure the syllabus is very structured, but at the FA, it's very much about, like, you learn this element of it, and now we learn this, and then we add these little building blocks to get to a point where when you finish your classes, you hopefully have all of that stuff. And I got like Mick Napier's book. It was a really big influence to me when I read it. And I think that was a really great thing for me to read after my classes, which was like, like he says in the book, like right after I'd finished like level five, he was like, you read this book and he's like, you don't need to take classes to get good at improv. And I was like, no, I spent all this money. But I agree to a certain degree, because maybe he didn't need to take classes, but I also think they do classes at the Annoyance. So, you know, I don't really know where that comes from, but like I needed classes, and I needed very specifically structured classes, because it's the way that my brain needed to learn this stuff, because I just needed to have things to bump up against so that this was a narrative thing, but like lily pads in the water, you know, to put my feet onto that. This one felt like this one was a secure spot to sort of rest my learning on for a second and say like, okay, like you said, you know, learning everything, learning all these pieces one by one, how do we learn it all? And I needed to learn it piece by piece and have time to explore that before sort of moving on to the next thing. And I've also done some clowning, and I did really enjoy that, and that definitely felt very free form. And I think that element of it, of like, I think the best improv is all of those things. I think the FA isn't just this like boring, grounded, like we're all in office scenes. Like there's some incredible improv that I've seen come out of the FA that is like so absurd and so like most of the great players of the FA have both to pull from, and they've come from different schools and schools that now don't even exist in London anymore. So I think it's like taking all of the elements from everything and putting it together to like what works for you, what's your in the clowning side of things, you spend time figuring out what is it about you that is funny, what are the sort of things that you can do that the audience like, what do you do that the audience don't like, and I think that's the same thing as like pulling all of these ideas that different schools, different teachers, different books, like what are the things that resonate with you? And again, I sound like a broken record. What are the things that make you have an epiphany about your playing? So I think that it's kind of like, just do whatever you want to do that makes you a better improviser from my perspective anyway. And I think, yeah, like doing classes, being in class, like I know it's expensive, so it's not, everybody can't just be in class all the time, but like, you know, for me, that's what I like to do. I like to, when I see a class come up that I like, I'll go and do it, and I just try and keep learning. So I think like, yeah, taking a lot of classes from a lot of different people and having a lot of different coaches come and coach your team or different teams that you're on, I think like that's what's made, like hopefully has made me a better improviser. I think like whatever floats your boat, just the way I think about it.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm thinking of like, what kind of skills does that, do you need to be able to do that? And I'm thinking of like, you need to be able to hold contradictions within yourself, just be aware of it that way. Since if you're doing classes at one school and then you may do a class at another school or another teacher and you figure out they are saying contradiction stuff, like, mm-hmm. or opposite stuff. I'm thinking of it right now when you're speaking, like, because I totally agree with you once again.
Yeah.
Like, since I'm doing it as well, I want to take classes as often I can with teachers that have a special like opinion on something or like expertise on something. And this teacher might say, yeah, always lead with a character. And another one say, always be a blank paper when you go in and whatsoever. And as you say, like, yeah, whatever resonates in you or what resonates in you right now in this moment or what does suits the scene
Absolutely.
And yes, and I think
the toughest part is to make sure that the things that you're holding on to, it's not like confirmation bias. It's not like, I agree with you because that's what I've always thought. I think the harder thing to do is to kind of consider everything and everything that you're told and give it some weight so that you know that you're open to the idea, even if it's something that you've never thought of before, or even if it's something that you vehemently have, that you'd like, no way. But because I think it, again, I'm going to say, this is the last time I'm going to say the word epiphany. I think if you're holding yourself back from having those I'm going to say aha moment, that's different, right? If you're holding yourself back from that because you know, like out of pride or stubbornness or just because you haven't tried it, you know, you were given a note about like, you need to be louder, or you need to be quieter, or maybe you're in too many scenes, maybe you're in not enough scenes. And if that rubs it up against you in a way, like, and you think, no, like, take a second and consider, like, what if that's the thing? And why not? Why don't I just see? Because that, you know, that keeps you open to having those moments. But then there'll always be things that if you genuinely consider them and you realize like, that just doesn't work for me. That's not my way of thinking. It's why like game is one word that works for people to describe what the funny thing is in the scene. Something that I really like is the McNapier idea of like, what's your deal? And I think that that's a really good way of, if you're struggling in scenes to play game, or if the game is, it's like, when we have these like fun games that aren't like, you couldn't, but a lot of time in class you're asked to like, oh, name this game with two words, you know, like monkey cops or like whatever the game is. But if it's not as definable and it is maybe slightly more absurd, but it's still funny and you're still being grounded and there's not a really easy way to like pin it down, sometimes it helps me to be like, well, what's my deal? Like, what kind of person am I now because of the information that we've got? Like, and for other people, and then like playing game throughout the scene, the phrase like, if this is true, what else is true, really works for people. But for me, I can't really think that way, because then I start planning the scene and like writing moments that'll come up. Same for game. Like, I think when I'm really in it, I think just being like, I'm this kind of person, that's my deal. But that's because that just resonated with me. And it was just something that I'd never heard before, but I'd been going to classes for whatever, a year at that stage, and being told that this like game is the way to do it. And like, yeah, I think it really is. It's just, it's the wording can just help, again, whatever way your brain processes these things. So yeah, just being open to that stuff and sort of new ideas from people, even if they rub up against you a little bit.
Gareth, what was the, I've forgotten actually what the subject, I think it was a great, like, what did we say?
Navigating scenes.
Oh yeah, navigating scenes within the scene, yeah. So on that as well, like, I think it was, I took the class with Jason Perez.
Oh, cool.
It was a great. He was also level 3 and 4.
Oh, sorry, you took it with him. Sorry, he was doing a workshop at the same time.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And that was great. Yes, also being inspired, watching him, playing with him, and also like acting wise, playing grounded and so. And I talked to him in this podcast as well. And he said, I think I enjoyed the quote. This was like, everyone can take, or like, it's easy to go into the bank. It's harder to get out. In the bank world. And I think that, because that's resonated to me with the navigate on the scene. Like, it depends on if you do short form or long form as well. Like, in the short form, it's easy to just throw out loads of different things. You don't have to justify, in my sense anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, it can just be stupid fun and short in a sense. And long form, you have to take, in a sense, more responsibility of what actually happens. And that, I think, is when you do need to, or when you start long form, either if it's game of the scene or narrative or whatsoever, mm-hmm. you need to master or to learn how to navigate in the scene. And then I guess one way to do it is like the balance between being present and like the eye, outer eye as well on the scene.
I when I'm on the back line, I genuinely am trying to clear my mind and listen to the scene, because I know, or at least I hope, something's just going to come to me. Like, okay. And I think that, I think I had this, like, by doing the Harold, I think I've heard from some people recently were talking about, like, oh, I find the Harold so difficult. And I totally understand, because especially the way it's taught, you do have to do it. There's a way of doing it, and you're trying to hit these moments in class. But I think something that should be stressed to students is, like, this is to help cut away some of your natural instincts of, like, disagreement or not, like, it's we're taught it in that this way because it will help us down the line. But I think some people come out of class being like, oh, well, this is the only way to do it. And if I don't do it right, like our coach, Alex, said he was coming out of Harold night one night and heard some people from the audience talking about our team, Nana. And they were like, oh, they were so good. And then somebody was like, yeah, but they break all the rules, which is so funny because, like, first of all, I think we actually do quite a traditional Harold. But yeah, like I do, like it's a really fun group to be a part of because I do think I don't know, like we're not so focused on the things you have to get right in class, which are let's see the premise from the monologue. Let's see how, like, we don't want it to be any different. Let's play the premise that we've been given. Let that be the thing that we find the game with, you know, like you're going to get, like, in my experience, if you're in class and something sort of fun comes up in your scene that isn't to do with the premise, you're probably going to get side coached to sort of get back to the premise to focus on that. And I think it should be that way in class so that you can try that out, you know, to play game in the way that it is set out in the syllabus, and it is the way that we try and teach it so that everybody gets the same sort of, like, experience and the same, to come out with the same knowledge of how to do this thing that we're teaching.
The same framework, yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, our level five course is sort of about, like, letting all that go and, like, trying to freeform your format even. And actually, I think this was, like, again, another aha moment for me. Wait, a eureka moment. That's a different one as well. So you've got three. we were doing the flower format for a long time.
Pretty flower?
Yeah, the pretty flower of the Spokane. And we did it with a team. And I found it really hard. I found it, like, it was very prescriptive and we sort of had to, like, do very, very specific moves. And then during the pandemic, I did one, or I did a few online with a group that I was a part of. And we just did it, like, it was like we knew what the format was. We have to have a base scene. So when we did, like, instead of having this very specific, like, it has to be set up this way and everybody gets, like, we just did a base scene and then people tagged out of it and we would just keep coming back. And I realized that one of the sets, the Fuck That Shit did, like, it maybe not consciously, but they're doing a Spokane, like, and I never even realized. And I think the Harold can feel very restrictive in a way because it's this, like, structure, like the structure is very set and, you know, all the students know the structure and you go and you do the show and you know that the people in the audience are watching. But I think the best Harolds are the ones that the audience have, they don't give a shit about the format. If you if you do your opening and you have a premise in mind and you start your scene and something really funny happens that's got nothing to do with the premise, that's the scene.
Mm.
And that's the show. Like, that's I think what we try and do at least is, and I think it was being encouraged to do so, is like, have fun. And like, the show is the most important thing. Like, enjoying it and still being a professional, still grounding and still doing all that stuff. But yeah, like following, like if something fun comes up and you ignore it, I think it's very disappointing to an audience. Because they're like, oh, that was fun. Oh no, now we've got to hear about this clunky premise that Gareth thought of like 15 minutes ago, like that we can't even remember. So yeah, I think like forms are there to like, I don't know, like stretch us a bit and to, yeah, they give a way of learning in class, like especially the Harold, because it does everything. But like even in our second beats in class, you're very much like encouraged to really do those dashes, you know, time dash or character dash, whatever way people want to think about it. But like we were encouraged to, like, if there was like something really fun in that scene that it wasn't even like a huge part of it, or it was just something you thought was like interesting, we can see that scene. Like, we don't need to do the, okay, I'm in an office, and then in second beat, I'm the president, and then third beat, I'm in space. Like, it's not maths. It's supposed to be art. It's not, I know it sounds pretentious, but you can't formula it to be funny. And like, it'll be funny if you are finding the funny in the show. And yeah, like being on, like I said, being on the back line and just like watching and then being like, something comes up that you are like, oh, like especially in the third beats, we do incorporation of the third beats. And I definitely found myself for years being like, okay, I played this character and I could slot them in this way and this way. But like, we call it reincorporation island, where all of these people are standing on stage doing their reincorporation together. But I think like, yeah, like just genuinely watching and being inspired of like, oh my God, I see the link now, you know, that just reminded me that I played this character, rather than, yeah, trying to shoehorn it in. It's like, there's a really great interview series from Philippe Gollier, like clowning teacher. He says, nobody wants to hear your shitty idea. And it's so true. Like trying to make something work, or trying to like outsmart comedy, like it's, we know what it feels. It feels eggy and it feels shoehorned. And actually those moments of like genuine discovery and genuine like, oh wow, I see the connection. I see something funny. I'm going to come in and do it. And being inspired to come in and do it because it feels fun. Like, so I've had like so many moments in improv where a coach is like, so how come you did that? And I'd be like, I don't know. And they're like, did you think it was going to be fun? Did you like, were you excited to do that move? And I was like, no. I just thought like, I thought that's what we should do. I don't know. Yeah. And I think it's like taking that step from class of like, I've learned this format, I know how to do it. Now I can make the show fun and have fun within the show, regardless of what the format is.
Yeah. No, totally. I think you do that great as well at the FA in the classes. You're saying that this is an exercise, it's not a scene in that sense. So we are practicing it, because I also think that you really need to do it in order to be able to standing on the back line and letting the connections suddenly occur.
Yeah.
Because you're primed to do it, because you have done it practicing. So it's their subconscious. It has become a second nature, or start to become it anyway.
Yeah.
But during a show, don't do that, because then eventually you turn out doing it like, as you said, like to just do it because you are forced, because that's supposed what this shall happen right now. And the only persons who are criticizing in Harold after seeing it is, as you said, as an example, I guess, who was another improviser who said, like, well, they didn't Harold, but I don't, they broke all the rules, like. But the average, or like the audience, or anyway, improvisers, what I think anyway, that has reached a certain degree of improvising or have done it, they just want to enjoy improviser having fun together. They don't give a shit about the format, of course, like, or they might even get eager to see, like, yeah, I guess Hjalmar would have done that. Like, was it an harem? Was it a Spokane? Or was it like something in between? Or was it just a free form? Or,
yeah.
And if I was too curious, I would have asked. And then you said, yeah, this was an harem that we went away from. Or
that's,
whatever.
That's the fun of like being an imp, like taking classes and being like, oh, they're doing a harem, or oh, they're doing an Armando or a montage, or like seeing the format is fun for students. Like, or it just like improvisers in general. It's just, it is fun to sort of figure out like, what are they doing there? Like, what's their, like we do, I'm on a team called the Gatekeepers. We were all working at the door at the FA, when we first started. So we called ourselves the Gatekeepers, but it's like I've been on this team for like 6 years now and we still do shows together and we're all really good friends. So, but we do a format, which isn't even really a format. It's like a part of the JTS Brown. It's called the Detour.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And it's really fun. And it's like the way we do it, it's just a scene that gets swept. And then we do the same scene again. And at some point it detours to a different thing. And there's like, a more prescriptive way of doing it, of like having an object. There's all these sort of different ways of doing it. But we do it for about 25 minutes. And sort of the detour point gets like earlier and earlier and earlier. But actually, like, we don't really think about it that way. We just sort of like, the only stipulation we sort of give ourselves is like, let's try and do the exact same scene pretty much twice, you know, like a little bit different is fine, but it just sets up the, what we're doing. But like that, funnily enough, that format has like, we did a show at the Edinburgh Improv Festival, the festival that Jason organizes. And with Jason and Laura and other people, not just Jason. We did that show and we had so many people asking us about the form. And that's like the first time I've ever had that, which is like, because it's also like big improv nerds going to this thing, like, you know, me included, people are really into that. And I do, and that is fun. Like, I think that's a really fun element of improv, and like it shouldn't be lost. Like, people trying new formats is important, but if it's not fun or feels like the thing I would say to anybody who just doesn't enjoy doing the Harold, like I would always say, like, there is probably a way that you could find enjoyment in doing this, or in any format, like, and maybe like maybe there's a way, yeah, maybe there's a way of doing it that you can enjoy, but just don't do it. Like, and I know it is tough because like the structure at a lot of schools is sort of, there's Harold teams and you audition for the Harold team. And so I totally understand. But yeah, I think like these formats are supposed to be there to, like, you use them to keep your show, to give your show a shape, to keep the pace up, or to keep to be able to when you get to like a big manic moment, to be able to slow down, like to giving you those set points that you can use to your benefit. You know, we've recently sort of changed how we're doing our group games at the moment, because that was probably the one element of the Harold that we were kind of doing the way, you know, everyone get in here, or, and I think we've just sort of started to do them a bit more like, let's just do whatever. Like, as long as it doesn't feel like a scene, as long as it feels different and it is that sort of, you know, quote unquote palate cleanser, let's just do it, you know? And we've had like sort of, yeah, again, like surreal, weird, like character monologues from things that happened in the show or something that was about the tone of the show. Like we've just sort of freed ourselves up. And if it does sort of become group gamey, then that's fine. It's not, but it's like, again, breaking the rules. Like if we did this in class, people might say like, oh, can we keep it separate from the you know, it shouldn't have anything to do with the show. It should be completely separate. But I think that's like being told once you finish your classes and you've like practiced this stuff and you feel like you've got it all in your bones, you can try whatever the hell you want, whatever makes, you can do half a Harold. Will Hines like put up an essay recently about like how Harolds are too long, which I think was quite like controversial. I don't know how controversial you can be in the improv world, but yeah, like, you know, or maybe doing like the headless Harold, like no opening organic Harolds. We've done some of that stuff. We tried to do like TJ and Dave style, no word Harold. And it was really fun. Like, but again, it didn't matter what format we were doing. We were just trying to do good scenes and like do all the work that we do when we're having, you know, good shows. And the form, and if we skip a beat or we, you know, and that, like, how often does that happen where people skip a beat or they go into the wrong thing and then like that scene becomes about that they missed the beat and like, but like, I'm not even saying that's bad, but I'm just saying like, it's not necessary, but you can, if it's fun, you do it, but like you can do whatever you want because no one's going to come away from a really great show saying like, "That was great, but like that second beat didn't happen," or like, people might say it in like an inquisitive way, but like no one's ever going to be annoyed, you know. It's fun to like mess with the players on stage, like of course, like, and there's like in jokey stuff like that is funny, and I'm not trying to say that like that stuff can't work. What I'm just saying is like, if it makes you fearful that you missed a thing and now you're making that move because you feel guilty and you're saying it, you know, out of fear, or embarrassment, and you're sort of trying to like protect yourself. Like, I knew that we missed it, you know, like I totally get that instinct, but it, if it's fun to play with, then like, you know, that's the reason to do it. And I really think that that's across all moves. Like if it just feels fun, but that takes a long time to harness that like instinct of what is fun and what is unhelpful. Like what's gonna undermine the show in a way that, like you said earlier, don't go for laughs, go for cheers. Yeah, there's so many. Graham Dixon's coached us a lot, and he's like a co-founder of the theater and of Ostentatious. And Ostentatious, like, because he also teaches the narrative course, like he's talked about so many moments in Ostentatious where like a crowd genuinely like gasp or boo or like the bad character, not because the show is bad, like, yeah, like they like people having these reactions that aren't necessarily just laughs, like it can be it's incredibly satisfying, like, and it's, you know, from time to time it's happened in our shows where actually, that show, that Fable show that you saw, there was like a reveal at the end that everyone was like, "Holy shit!" It's like as if we planned this thing, and like, of course we didn't. Like, it was just some silly, like, in the moment choice. But the reason why I think that stuff happens is because nobody sold the show out throughout. Nobody did those like, "What the hell are we doing here?" You know, moves. And I think it is hard because like, and I think like so many, you know, there's so much literature on this, but like so many choices in improv that feel like weird or eggy come out of fear. It's like, I'm afraid, I feel embarrassed, or I want to say, I'm going to protect myself here. So I'm going to make a move, or I'm going to, you know, like, even in like level one, and like, I'm going to say no, because it means that I'm in control. I'm going to be teaching you something because that means that I'm safe and, you know, I can control the scene. And like, you know, and I think those same moves can happen. Yeah. Like when something goes wrong or like even when the scene is just going in a way that you just don't think the scene's going very well. So you throw your partner under the bus or the show for a laugh, you know, and it works. You can get big laughs by being like, "What the hell is going on in this improv show?" But I think especially in narrative, it's like the death of a show. But I would even say that in all improv, it's almost never worth it. Like, to if it doesn't feel like it's like a bouncy, fun, we're all keeping the show afloat thing and keeps the integrity of the show together, it's like, I personally just think like, just let it go. Like, you know, it doesn't matter. You miss the thing or you don't have enough chairs on stage. Like how often is that joke, you know, I brought my own chair from home. So, yeah, I think it's like, it's to be avoided personally.
But Gareth, I want to ask you also, if you have seen a great show, for example, Fuck That Shit, what do they do as improviser that you think, like three things you really enjoyed or think that they did great?
Yeah, like just really being present. And it's such a hard thing, nothing to describe. Like, but when you see it, you know what it is. Like people who are really discovering things in the moment and being present.
Can I also just ask about that? Yeah. Because earlier you said to invent instead of create, I think you said, but I've just heard the like discover versus invent. What's the difference between create and invent?
Yeah, I think like, what was my trademark phrase that I'm going to coin? Innovate, don't create, which is like,
innovate, yeah.
It's like there's so much inferred in scenes when you just have a couple of lines of dialogue, say we can, you know, we have an exercise even in level one where we say like assumed like reality, or I'm not sure what it's called, but like one line of dialogue, you can make all these assumptions about the world and the people, and it's using all of those things. Like if you've had a scene that's like, that's been built and you know who they are, what their relationship is to each other, what might be going on. You don't need to like, oh, look, there's a monster over there. Or like, look at this over here. Look at this new thing that I'm like bringing in. It's like innovating from, and I think like the, if this is true, what else is true is kind of the, like if I'm a single dad, I've got to pick up the kids, or I've got to like, I've got a date. Like, I hope they, you know, I hope they don't mind that I've got kids, like whatever, like, as you can see, I'm really good at thinking of specific scenes, but like, I think those are the things that's the well to grab from, you know? And I think, yeah, like people say, like, it's all there in your partner's eyes. It's you, all you need is in your scene partner's eyes. I think that's a McNapier thing. And like, it is true. Like it's, you don't need to create anything to give you stakes or give you drama. It's just line by line creating this world together. And I saw TJ and Dave in London. They came over and played some shows. And that is like that's the best version of it I've seen, which is just like moment to moment decisions. And nope, like I'm sure they've been doing this for a long time. I'm sure they've got some sort of like, oh, there's this character that like, there's got to be some element of that. But watching them throughout the show, that every single moment they are discovering what's happening. Like it is just so electric to see. And I think Fuck That Shit are so good at that on a more like anarchic, like fast paced level. But they, like, not to say that they don't have like that all the grounding and all that, like they do all of the commitment, but they're just so good at like picking up what the person's putting down, you know, understanding the vibe, understanding, what is the other person getting at? Like, and even if they're not necessarily like it's just like everyone's on the same page, it feels, at all times. And even when they're not, when it shifts, there's never a moment of like, wait, no. It's like immediately getting on the, like, you know, jumping on the other train that's going past, like, and just very quickly being able to adapt while also spending the whole time discovering and not like inventing for a joke or invention's sake. The most recent thing is like just being like being truthful, like really, really genuinely saying the most truthful thing, even as the voice of reason, even as the unusual character, even in group, like just playing the sort of like the I think Will Hines calls it, you already know the real why. And I think the UCB manual call it like flash memory. But for me, it just boils down to like, what is the sort of thing that this person would say? Like what would they actually say? Not the funny line that I thought of, like, what's the genuine reaction? And I think it's really clearly emphasized when you see a scene where you've got quite a big, unusual character that isn't necessarily getting big laughs just now. And the voice of reason character is just being honest and just reacting honestly, and they're getting all the laughs. Like, I think that's a really clear version of this, but I think it's helpful. Like, even if that's not the case, like everyone being, you know, being truthful and again, not creating, just really trying to dig down into what's really going on in this, in your space or in the reality that we've created.
Great, thank you so much, Gareth. And I also want to say that since I've done the intensive at the FA. I think you do it like regularly, like 3 times a semester or something. Or how often do you run those?
Yeah, they run in the intensives run concurrently, so that you can sort of like do them all if you want. And then there's usually a couple of weeks break, I think, in between. But yeah, we have terms. Like eight week classes in January, March, I think. Yeah, then we have like a summer term. September. But yeah, we've classes running all the time.
Yeah, and I'm thinking especially for like Swedish improvisers that would like to learn more about game of the scene improv, in a sense, playing with like stress, playing on the acting and grounding. Maybe it's a great choice, and it's more information on the Free Association. You can just Google that, I guess.
Yeah, freeassociation.co.uk.
Yeah, and since you do have to accomplish level 2 to do level 3 and so on, but as I did, I emailed you guys and asked if that was okay based on my background, yeah. Like if you thought that it would work out or so. So yeah, I totally recommend it. It was great.
Great.
Okay, thank you, Gareth.
Thanks. Lovely to meet you.